don't let other people tell you when you're allowed to create. I think it's easy to get overwhelmed and think you're not good enough. And just if you have a story inside of you and you want to create and do your art, then do it. You can always find a way.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 59th episode of Making a Woman of Film. 59, yeah, I know. I don't know why that number, but that just... Damn, we are nearing the finish line of the first season in collaboration with Redeeming Features, and I can't believe it either. My name is Evita, I'm a writer, lover of film, and the host of this podcast, which features weekly interviews with women working across the film and TV industry, in front and behind the camera. This week, I spoke with actress and producer Jilly Jones. From voice performance, finding a character's physicality, filming in a park with giant spiders and crocodiles, gender dynamics and relationships, and how to produce a low-budget feature horror film, this interview is filled with golden laughter. I want to thank you for listening to our show and supporting us in our journey to amplifying women's voices in film. You can follow and get in touch with us on Instagram for more content in between episodes, and check out the show notes for any links mentioned throughout. Enjoy. And I am here with Jilly Jones. How are you doing, Jilly?
I'm awesome. I'm excited to be here.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm very, very much looking forward to getting into everything with you. And now you are an actress and a producer, and we're going to be talking about both of those jobs and how they intertwine and everything in between. But as anyone who's listened to this podcast will know, I always like to jump into a time machine in the beginning of our interviews. What time should we go back to, Jilly, to see the moment you first fell in love with acting?
I was 7 years old. And it was Christmas time, and my parents took my sister and I to see the national tour of Les Miserables. We were living in Philadelphia at the time, and I remember my parents talk about how they were told we were too young to go see that show, but I was on the edge of my seat the entire time, and it was the moment that I fell in love with acting, and I said, that's what I want to do when I grow up, because it pulls at your heartstrings and you're feeling the emotions that the actors on stage are feeling. And I wanted to be able to give that feeling to other people.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. I do feel like stage plays, especially the acting has to be, it has to draw you in. Otherwise it doesn't work. You know, it has to be so alive, and it's probably more alive than in any other form, really, because you're right there with them.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Was there a particular moment, a particular scene or character when you started actually working on acting yourself that really made you realize that this was the path for you?
I would say in my voice lessons, oddly enough, I wasn't allowed to start taking them until I was 10. We started with music from Les Miserables, and because I was so young, I was learning Castle on a Cloud from Les Miserables. That was the first piece that I really remember working on your singing, yes, but also my teacher was talking about, you know, imagining that feeling of being a little girl that's abandoned by her mom. And I come from a really affectionate, loving home. So that was a stretch for me. So I think as a little girl, that was like really the first time you kind of start imagining a completely different world or setting than your own. And then if you fast forward to my acting classes in my 20s, I was taking at the Nashville Acting Studio by Caroline LeCourier. She's amazing. And I was doing a scene from Babel with someone who is one of my best friends. And it's the scene where I'm like very injured and my husband has to help me pee in a water bottle. And I just remember actually like when you really start breaking down, like if any other actor understands, like when you're really in the moment and feeling it and you're not paying attention, you don't even realize the other students in the room, you're just connected with your scene partner and legitimately brokenhearted and crying and feeling like, oh my God, am I going to die? And it's like, it was, that is like one of the most memorable scenes I think for me that I've ever done as an actress.
Wow, that sounds incredible. I do love hearing how actors feel when they act. when they really embody that character, when you try to step into a character, like how do you do it? How do you work? Because obviously it's acting, it's pretend, but there's also a lot of work that goes into kind of letting go of yourself, right?
Yeah, physicality is actually really important to me. And I don't know if that's because I come from the theater world first, and I did murder mystery dinner theater for 5 years. So that is very much more character-y. So you have to have kind of overly physical aspects to really define who you are. So I really struggle with getting into character until I find, how does my character walk? How does my character sit? What do they sound like? And I have to say my lines in a bunch of different voices and accents to play around with it. And once I really find their physicality, the emotional life comes so much easier. Ooh,
tell me more.
Like, it's crazy. And then I also love to then journal as my character. You kind of write as like what this character is going through in the scene, or if what's happening in the scene, you're trying to figure out, well, how did we get to this point? So you're journaling maybe as them 5 or 10 years ago with something traumatic that might have happened. I went through so many different scenarios of why my character was how she is in The Curse of La Patisola. And what's so funny is it isn't even necessarily there with you when you finally end up on set performing the scene, but having kind of written through it and gone through that emotional life, it kind of stays built in there.
Yeah, no, I love that. I love that because, you know, the movies, the TV shows, we see the characters, that's like snippets of their life, you know. But there was something before. Even if they don't show it, you know, that's all about how the character becomes complete.
Yeah, because who I am today is impacted by my childhood and traumatic experiences that I'm having. It all kind of, we joke about people having baggage, but like we all have baggage, whether it's happy, sad, non-emotional, it's still there because it's an experience that we had. So
yeah. What's the longest journal you've written for a character?
Oh gosh. Probably only like 15 pages, I think. But I will say, like, I've only done one full feature where I'm the lead actress. Yes. And a lot of times I'll do smaller journal pieces like on with the page of the scene, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I mean, 15 pages is still a lot.
I don't think it sounds like a lot, but maybe that's just me.
Well, it just go with a very large word count, which I'm sure it includes. I want to also go back to just voice coaching, voice training. When it comes to voice as an actor, tell me a bit about that. Just what that means, first of all.
Yeah. So first of all, when I hear recordings of myself, I feel like I sound like a five-year-old sometimes, like Disney princess, little girl voice. But that's not going to work for every character, you know, especially like some characters need to come across harsher or more serious. And so then you might go down into your chest voice a little bit and drop your tone or slow down your speech. Depending on how educated your character is, they might speak faster, slower, with not as great diction. And so there's a ton of things that go into what you sound like and a million reasons of why you might sound how you sound. You know, being a singer, it's interesting because I think that just comes naturally without thinking too deep into it. But then when you stop to really break it down, you think about like, okay, what's the tone of this character? Is it going to be a higher pitch or a lower pitch? What's the speed that she speaks in, you know? So I'm really thankful that growing up, I did musical theater. So I had dance, singing, and acting training, but all of that kind of comes together even when you're just doing straight acting roles.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly. And it's can probably also be a little bit exhausting if you're putting on a voice and you're at the same time like acting in, you're physically acting in a different way than someone else, and you might even be in a very emotional place as a character, you know, like it's there it's good to know how to sing and dance at the same time, you know, like that kind of strength to keep going through that.
I would tell anyone wanting to act, they need to get on stage and do dinner theater, because it is the best training. Cause like some shows I used to do would be 5 hours long. By the time you get through like the pre-show mingling and character and then the actual show and the intermissions, and like, you cannot drop your character. And so like, I definitely feel like doing dinner theater made me a much stronger character, because it's a lot of improv-ing within your character. So you just kind of start building those muscles. And then a lot of the characters I did in dinner theater, you take a version of that and can apply it to a lot of other types of characters you might be doing in the TV film world.
No, I completely see that. Characters are so strong, and they need to be to really get you into the story. At the end of the day, like, they are the storytellers, like, even though they're not necessarily the writers, they're how we see the story. So it's very important. Now, getting out of a character, obviously it is acting, and at some point it probably is just a switch, but are there any characters that kind of stay with you, stories that it's like, because they must somehow become like a separate lifeline, right? Like a separate life in a different timeline.
Yeah, I actually would say I did a scene study on Daisy from The Great Gatsby, and that was really hard to come out of, especially because the scene that I was doing was with Gatsby. It was the scene where Daisy kind of breaks down, and the work I had done with the other actor in class, we were not romantically involved outside of class, but I had kind of like, he gave me a photo of him and to keep during the week while I was working. And so like, I was just kind of really went into this headspace of, I need this person in my life and I love them. And like, I remember after class, we always would go out to dinner and he didn't come that night. And I got really like needy of like, where is he? Like, I need him to be here. And it was so weird because again, like, wasn't dating him, wasn't romantically interested, but the character had kind of like, it's almost like I overly prepped and I couldn't get past like meeting this person for a couple days. And I don't even remember how I came out of it, but I just kind of needed to be kind to myself, that like, okay, like recognize it for what it is. You just had like a really, it was a good breakthrough in my acting class too. I was working on vulnerability and being vulnerable with someone else. So you have to be very forgiving of yourself, I think, when for some reason your body and your mind isn't wanting to come out of that character, to just be like, okay, this is what it is and it's okay and it's going to pass, and just give it some time. But that was probably one of the most crazy experiences of not just coming out of it right away.
Oh, wow. That almost sounds like some sort of possession. Which is probably a good segue into the curse of La Patasola.
Yes. Hey.
Now, the curse of La Patasola is a horror movie and a conversation of gender dynamics and character relationships. Two struggling couples take a camping trip to a deserted forest. Underneath the romantic tensions lie the legend of La Patasola, an ancient vampiric woman who kills the men who cheat and inhabit the women involved. Now, this is a very interesting movie. It was directed by A.J. Jones, who also plays the, dare I say, insufferable Daniel, and also happens to be a husband often on screen. It also stars Naja Bradley, who plays the vocal Naomi, and Patrick Walker in the role of James, her gentle boyfriend, and then, of course, you, Jilly, play Sarah, a soft-spoken wife learning to stand up for herself. When I was first watching this movie, my literal first note was, God, Daniel is some, and then a word starting with C I probably can't say on here. The relationship between your character Sarah and AJ's Daniel is very interesting to me. Like right off the bat, we start out with him going on an anti-feminist monologue while Naomi fights him and Sarah stays silent. Playing a troubled couple for some could be difficult. Getting into this character, what was your and AJ's approach in playing this couple?
Yeah, so it was really hard for me to not judge Sarah because in AJ and I's actual relationship, we've actually owned a business together within the first 2 months of dating. And the way we met, I was his boss. So I'm a very strong spoken woman. He likes when I challenge him. And, you know, he's one of the first men I've ever dated that I don't have to apologize for, like, just wholly being myself. And I so appreciate that. So to then kind of fall into a character that I'm playing his wife and it's so not that was really hard. And because he wrote it, I had the luxury of living with the writer and being able to really pick his brain of, well, because he wrote Sarah knowing that I would be playing her. Mm. And I was like, why would you ever write a character for me that's like this? And it actually came from how caring I am of others. The business that we owned served other actors in the Atlanta community. He said, I always see you more worried about other humans around you than yourself, to the point that you sometimes maybe short yourself out or miss out on some opportunities because you're helping other people. And so once he explained that to me, I kind of took that concept and pushed it into the extreme of where you find Sarah of she's putting Daniel's wishes so far above her own that you find her just completely bulldozed over. And so I kind of really had to hang on to, I want to prioritize Daniel because I'm trying to help him. But in the end, you really end up hurting yourself. I think, unfortunately, there are a lot of people in this world that can be men who are really good bullshitters. I know several women that have gone through bad divorces who just never saw certain things coming and took all the load on themselves, and where I knew the guy and you never know what's going on underneath. And you come to find out that like there was so much emotional and mental abuse going on in the relationship and manipulation to where they present like, oh, I'm going to do all of these amazing things for us. I just need X, Y, and Z for you. Give me 6 months, give me a year. And then it easily turns into longer. Unfortunately, I think that that's how you sometimes have strong women end up in these kinds of relationships without even realizing it.
Exactly. And it's interesting because Sarah, your character, is like in the beginning, she's like, oh yeah, I've never believed relationships should be 50-50. Sometimes it's 60-40 and sometimes it's 70-30. Yeah. And that's true to some degree, but 5 years later, you might need to reconsider.
Well, exactly. And you know, I love that line. It actually came from a story my dad told us. Because he and my mom were given that advice on their honeymoon by a bunch of different people. And so I've kind of always kept that with me, but that's the thing is it does need to swing both ways. I love the scene where Naomi really supports Sarah and kind of gives her that encouragement of like, yeah, you can feel that way, but it does, it has to go both ways. And if you just end up where it's completely one-sided all the time, that is not a healthy relationship.
Which is interesting because then that kind of happens for her own relationship with James.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, how was it to see your husband play such an asshole?
So what's really funny is I tell him to his face all the time because I put him on tape for his auditions. I'm like, the roles that you play well are men that I would never date in real life. I really dislike you when you're acting. He just got a big audition for like a guy that like murders a woman, or like he just gets these really nasty roles. And I don't know what it is because it's not who he is at all as a person. My aunt actually watched the movie and sent this big text chain to all of my mom and their siblings being like, we need to have a talk with Jilly. Like, this is not okay for her husband to be treating her like this. Everyone was like, he was acting. And she was like, yeah, but like, was he like, because is this their relationship? I think it's hilarious because he's so kind and patient. Like, I'm actually the one that will, I'm a yeller. He calls me a fire blood because I get very emotional and loud. And he's kind of the patient, calming presence in our relationship. Mm-hmm. We're opposites in the movie, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's really, really interesting. And I feel like there's so much to dig into in like the behaviors and where they come from. Like, I feel like when it comes to Daniel's character, you know, because he is reliant on his wife's salary, and yet he spews a lot of this very anti-feminist talk and very like macho talk, you know, this very women need us men and yet I need my wife, you know, and without acknowledging that, without seeing the hypocrisy there. And when I was watching it, I almost felt like, you know, he's probably been like, character Daniel's probably been in like a world where there are these very expected gender roles, and then when he falls into one that falls outside of that norm, he's kind of clinging on to very toxic masculinity to not feel so emasculated, to feel as if he's still part of something else.
Yeah. AJ was a baseball player growing up. He played baseball in college. And he says that the reason he feels like he can do those kind of roles so well is not because he is that, but because he was surrounded by a lot of males like that in the athletic and competitive athletic world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, that makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah. Unfortunately. Yeah.
I know.
Now, what was your favorite moment during this production? Is there anything? I mean, I'm sure there were a bunch, because it looks like it was a lot of fun to film, but is there any like standout moments that you're like, oh my God, this was amazing?
Yeah. So the shooting the yoga scene with Nasha, which I know I brought up earlier, but I think that was it was an earlier day in our shooting schedule. And I think it was the time that I really found my confidence as the lead of this film and like really fell into Sarah and got to play for the first time. And it's like pretending that you are high, like you just have to go into this like giggly mode. And so because it's a serious horror movie, there's not a ton of like comedy laughing scenes. So we just had so much fun making the crew crack up around us, and we kept getting interrupted sound wise because of cars on the highway nearby. So like you kept stopping, but you're trying to stay in the moment. So Naj and I just started spewing like ridiculously silly things like about like farts or, you know, anything to just keep you giggling and in that moment, because you're fighting to stay in it while also, but can't perform the scene right now because we're holding for sound. So let me just like keep you giggling in it. And that was so much fun.
Mm-hmm. Now that's interesting. Yeah. Like tell me a bit more about like being on set. Where did you film this?
So we filmed it in a little state park outside of Orlando, Florida, called Lake Louisa State Park. My husband and I went hiking there and like right at the beginning of COVID and turned around in 5 minutes because it was like, it was terrifying. We thought something was going to jump out and eat us. And so at the same time we went, we should leave, but also we need to film something here, and it needs to be a horror because it's a terrifying looking place. So the park was really easy to work with to film there. But it was also very difficult because there were spiders like bigger than my head, like banana spiders and stuff down there. And then you also have like crocodiles or alligators like swimming back and forth in, like when you're on the water. So we had an animal safety person. And because it's a sanctuary state park, you know, love my husband. He had me crawling under logs that had like spider webs under them. And you can't just go in and spray everything because it's a safety habitat. So you had to move, you couldn't kill a spider. You had to move the spider.
Oh no. Oh no.
So there were so like, I still have nightmares sometimes about the wildlife that we were filming next to.
Yes, God.
And my family laughs because I am not a bug person. But like, oh, the truck scene where Patrick and I are talking in the truck, there was a giant spider in that had crawled inside the truck that they couldn't reach because the cameras were like locked on the doors to shoot us. So we had to film that scene with the spider in the back seat.
And oh my God.
It was there. And I had to just like, because you can't, again, you can't kill it, right? Because you're in the state park. So you can't just turn around and like, what? So Patrick was a team player and he was like, just don't turn around. Like, don't look at it. Just stay right here with me. So there's a lot of those moments too.
Oh my God. Now that is a challenge for an actor. Oh my God. That's insanely impressive that you got through that.
Thank you.
That's And I'm sure it must also be nice to actually shoot on location.
Yes. It helps you really jump in, if you will, of like when you do need to be scared and running through the woods at night. And I would say like I legitimately was scared at certain moments. But also I think it just elevates the production quality because we're super, super low budget film and it's gorgeous. Like it looked like we were shooting on a movie set and had spent thousands of dollars on art department and we didn't. It just, that's what it really looks like.
Mm-hmm. No, it was stunning. It's actually really interesting. We just recorded an episode with a VFX supervisor who designed an entire forest. Yeah, each leaf, each bark, like everything. And I'm like, man, just thinking about the actors, but that's, I mean, if you want to be scared and acting, you want to be someplace with crocodiles and giant spiders. Like that is probably quite inspiring for the fear. God.
It was.
I cannot imagine. That's... Props to you. Props to you is all I can say.
Thank you.
Now, I wanted to talk a bit more about your producing role in this as well. And as a producer in general, when did you first realize that you wanted to get into producing as well?
So, funny enough, I wanted to be on Broadway all growing up, and I did not get into school for it. So I ended up going to, my parents were like, you have to get a college degree. So I went to University of Delaware for communications degree because communications was, there's a wide variety. You could get into the media having a communication degree. And they make you as a freshman go to all these different, you know, activities that the college campus offers. And I ended up working for the biweekly show, which is similar to The Daily Show or the Stephen Colbert show that used to be where it's like this comedy news show. And after my freshman year, the executive producers were graduating and everyone on the crew voted that I should be the executive producer the following year because I was so organized and on top of it. So like other people told me that I should produce.
Oh, that must have felt amazing. But also a bit scary.
It was a little scary and not what I was expecting, but that's really the first time that I got kind of the confidence that I could. So college is when I started producing. And then I did several different internships, one in London with the nonprofit company Media Trust. I did another one in LA, which is actually how I ended up with my personal assistant job. And when I was a personal assistant, I would sometimes nanny for my boss's kid and she would like to put on shows for her dad. So I, of course, as the quote unquote nanny, like started doing it. And he looked at me one day and was like, so like you act too? And I was like, oh no, I wasn't good enough to be an actress. So that's why I'm going to be a producer. And he was like, okay, but like you're actually, I can tell there is a strong passion for acting and you do have natural ability. And he was like, who told you you weren't good enough? And I was like, well, I didn't get into school for it. And he was like, yeah, that's like a very limited viewpoint on deciding that you can't do what you want to do. So he was the one that really inspired me to, he said, you need to build your chops. So go take classes and do dinner theater and do improv and just be on stage as much as you can and perform in whatever capacity you can, because I think that you like producing, but you're passionate about acting. And so at that point, I tried to go just back wholeheartedly into acting and forget about producing. And then when I was working for the murder mystery company, the organization was just simply not there. And so I cleaned up the city I was in. And then the owner was like, can you help us in our other cities too? So I ended up creating this whole regional program and overseeing 25 different cities for the company and building an inventory program, but while also being a lead actress. And I kind of realized how fulfilling it is to do both, because I'm very type A and I am obsessed with numbers and spreadsheets. But if I'm not also acting, there's a part of my heart that is also unfulfilled. I think I'm just this weird dual person where I need both things in my life. And when you're the producer, you're the boss. So you get to tell everyone else around you, by the way, I'm also going to act in this. And I don't have to wait on other people to allow me to be creative and decide I'm good enough to act. I get to just do the both things that I love.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I love that. Love that sentiment about just create, just do it. You have to do it, because if you keep waiting for people to give you permission, it's going to take a long time. And by the time you will get a yes, you will have given up.
Yeah. I wonder sometimes, I let several different colleges tell me that I can't act. And like, who is anyone to tell you that you can't do something that you're passionate about and that you love? You just gotta go do it. If that's what you want to be doing, don't wait for someone else to tell you you can, because they probably don't know.
Yeah, it's very inspiring to hear that you just took the matters into your own hands. And I've heard a lot of, especially actresses, say that that's just what they've been doing, that's what they've been needing to do, and it's given them more autonomy being on set. It's given them more power and more confidence in where the story is going as well, and not feel like just a puppet on a string, you know?
Well, exactly. Because who's better to tell the story of being a woman in the world than a woman?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You need the conversation. You need the discourse. You need the inputs from the people, especially the ones that the story revolves around. Like, it just makes sense.
Yeah. And I also, I was listening to a Women Empowerment Summit back in December, and it was a workshop with different below the line people, and they were all saying their favorite sets to work on are the ones with women as the producers on set, because they find that women producers listen better to what the needs are than male producers. Mm-hmm.
Probably because they themselves haven't been listened to in the past. You know, there's a knowing of that feeling of not being listened to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. But yes, create your own stuff, definitely, even if it takes a low budget. Now, low budget movies always impress me. I find them very inspiring. And this one certainly did. Like, you got great actors. The cinematography, I love the lenses used in the forest where the trees kind of curve. Like, I thought that was, it really pulls you into this disorienting state that the characters are in. And the music as well. Like, it was just very, very impressive to see what you may do with such a low budget. As a producer, what was your role? Were you involved in kind of like the prioritization of when it comes to budgeting and stuff like that on set?
Yeah, so I was like the final point person on every decision made, because the film getting made was born with myself and AJ. So while I had co-producers who were amazing, I could not have done it without Carlos Velasco and Jack Young. I was kind of like involved very much from the beginning in the budget and how to work it. What made it work, though, was we gave a lot of people their first feature film credit. So like our DP, Bradley Hayes, is amazing. It was his first feature as a DP. Our art department, it was their first feature film credit. Magnolia Art House was on it as our art director and prop master. Rachel Darrow had done features before, but our actual people who were on set doing the art stuff, it was their first feature credit. And it was a lot of people's first. And while that can be scary because you have to trust them to do a good job, I had known these people in the Atlanta film market for a while. They worked on a lot of music videos and short films and commercials, but just no one had ever given them a chance on a feature. And so because of that, they were willing to come in for a lot lower rates. And then we called in all of our favors possible. Like, I will never be able to get my crew for the rates that they worked on again, but they were doing us a favor because it was our first feature. And then COVID also played a big part of it. You know, these people hadn't worked in months because all the major productions were shut down. And so we were able to provide jobs for a lot of people for the first time in the pandemic. We shot in October 2020, which was at the height of the pandemic, and we kept everyone safe. Like, I'm so impressed we got through the shoot without any COVID cases, living in our little COVID bubble. But I think it was kind of like a perfect storm of people's first features and people not working and bringing a team together that made the quality of what we did for the budget that we did. Like, I would say the budget was $250,000, but I think when all is said and done, the production value probably really ended up being at $750,000.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's, wow. I'm just, yeah, I'm so impressed. What was the size of your crew approximately?
35 people. And 35 on the people. Day that the monster was on set, it jumped up to 40 because you had our monster specialist and stunt coordinator there. Those were the crazy days.
yes. Actually, maybe that'll spoil it a bit. I just want to know what it was like working with the monster.
Oh, I loved it. So the monster is actually played by one of my mentors in producing, Hamid Thompson. He mentored me on my first short film that I produced 3 years ago called Thursday. It's so funny because he's no longer producing because he realized he really just wants to act. So he tells everyone, like, she's like my only prodigy that I ever had, but like she's doing way more than I ever did. But so he's an amazing stunt guy too. And so he came out, and that was awesome because it was his eyes that I was acting with that you could see through the suit. And he's someone that I have a really close relationship with since he's a mentor of mine. So I think it actually created some of those really awesome moments that you'll see if you watch the film at the end. It was awesome. And looking at the face is scary, I will say. Like, it's easy to like fall into that imaginative place with the creature.
Oh, I love that. I love that that gives a whole new layer to that scene. Now, when you have to prioritize, when you have such a limited budget, how do you decide what comes through, like what prioritizing as a producer, making sure that you have what you need and also letting go of something you otherwise would have appreciated but might not have been able to, like, tell me about your prioritization process.
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's helpful to have a director that's very reasonable. I know directors that tack on hundreds of thousands of dollars to budgets unnecessarily because they won't budge creatively. And AJ cut 7 pages on set because we were a day and a half behind due to rain. He was very open to adjusting things that we did with the creature because we didn't have the budget to make it do certain things that the people building our monster could have gotten super fancy, but we couldn't afford to pay for those things. So when I just would be realistic with him, creatively, he would adjust how we would do certain things. But then in other instances, like when we're filming at night, there are certain lighting techniques that like having a giant balloon light on set, actually, it's very expensive. But there's no way we would have been able to shoot all of that stuff in 2 nights if we hadn't lit it that way, because it gave so much light and allowed our shooting schedule to move so much faster. So you kind of have to play that game of evaluating, like, that's a really big number and scares me, and I don't know if we can afford that. But if you think about how much time it'll cut you down and compare how much an entire day of labor costs, you'll go, oh yes, I can afford that because that's going to be way less expensive than adding on 3 days of shooting time because the lighting is going to take that much slower.
I'm sorry, did you say 2 days?
Yeah, we shot all this stuff on the so the entire shoot was 18 days.
Okay, because I was like, but 2 days.
I know, no, we didn't shoot all this in 2 days. Sorry, that was part of your. We shot the stuff that we shot at night on the road with the monster. We shot that in 2 days, and they hired an outside like balloon light. That they put like hundreds right. of up in the air, and it's sort of like a giant moon, and it's made lighting those scenes way, way faster.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Cleared up. Get it. Got it. Still very impressive. Still very impressive. Now, this was also your first feature as an actress. Watching the final cut. Have you watched the final cut, first of all?
Have.
Are you an actor who watches?
Yes, I have watched the final cut.
Okay, good. How was it?
It was awesome. I mean, the thing is, nowadays, like with acting, you have to put yourself on tape for your auditions. So you have to watch yourself. Like I wish I didn't have to watch myself sometimes, but but doing it, it makes you get really used to seeing yourself. And so I'm really proud of the final film. And I think that a big piece of why I did so well is because of the three actors that I got to share the screen with. You know, AJ, Naja, and Patrick are amazing. They're very team players when you're in scenes with them, if that makes sense. And so having a team to kind of play ball with made my job a lot easier on set.
Yeah, no, everyone has such strong performances and very strong characters that, like, it all just comes very naturally. It really does feel like you're just stepping into this moment. It doesn't feel staged in that way, the way that, you know, you have Daniel and Sarah's relationship, but then also the strange friendship fostered between Sarah and James when they both struggle. It just comes very completely.
So we were all living together because it was COVID. We were doing kind of the Tyler Perry COVID bubble thing. So the four of us were actually living in a vacation house together. So we were together like all the time. And you know, you go home and you're sitting by the pool and like able to run scenes at night and, you know, playing games together and just kind of getting to know each other on a natural human level that I don't know that you have as much opportunity for that when you're staying in hotel rooms and just kind of completely separated. So I definitely think it was helpful. Patrick and Naja would go like running with me at night and like do some training. Cause I was worried about, you know, the stunt stuff that I had to do with the monster at the end. So they were both like super supportive and that automatically creates a bond there I think you get to see then in this different scenes.
Yeah, no, definitely. Definitely. I just, applaud all of you. And I'm sure like, I mean, it is a good story for like a COVID film, you know, it's, very intimate, you know, no having to deal with the big crowds or anything like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now you've been doing this for a long time, Jilly. What keeps you motivated to continue? It's a tough industry to be in, but you seem to have a lot of aspirations and a lot more work in you.
Yeah, I think it's that I've tried to not do it, if that makes sense. Like I'm not going to act anymore because I'm just not good enough and like go to college for something else. And then you think you're not going to produce. And, you know, I've had jobs where I'm like selling office supplies for 6 months. I worked as an office manager, you know, and I just love telling stories. I am very strongly impacted by stories. I think Blood Diamond is the first feature film that I really walked away from thinking, wow, like that's going to make me think twice about how to have a positive impact in the world. And it film allows you to expose people to stories that they would never come across in their real life. Cause I don't live in Africa. Right. But, I love stories like that, that stick with you and make you force you almost to see the bad stuff that needs to change in the world. And I love that. I want to contribute to telling stories that people need to see that they never would have heard of if they're stuck in their little bubble. And so that really is my driving force behind wanting to keep being a creator and telling stories. And, you know, AJ is on the same page with me, our production company, Renegade Creative. Like we say, we are committed to telling stories that people have never heard before and creating worlds that people have never seen before. And we also plan on donating a portion of all of our profits from each film to a different organization that relates to the story that we're telling in that film. Like, I very much believe that entertainment can have a very positive effect on the world, and I want to be part of making sure that that happens.
Yes, yes, no, definitely. I think with this movie, while it is genre-wise perhaps horror, it at its core, it has a lot of just, it's about the characters and their backgrounds and the intersections between and their relationships and behaviors towards each other. I feel like that's really, I mean, at least for the first hour, that's really what it's all about, is being with them and understanding why they act the way they act. Because they're not cut and dry like templates, you know, there's much more depth to
them. Yeah. And La Patasola is also a true Colombian folktale, and she's never been seen on screen before either. So Daniela Gonzalez is AJ's co-creator of the story, and her family's Colombian. And like, it's been really, really special working with her to share this folktale, which then caught, because she goes after cheaters, to then explore the world of like why people cheat and how it impacts the people that get cheated upon. It's been very fun to explore that world with her.
Yes, yes, no, definitely. And also, you know, it's a legend that a lot of people have heard of, but still it's taken in a very new direction, and it offers a lot of, I would say, like current and relevant discourse when it comes to different political conversations that I found really interesting. And it seems like from reviews, some people, when they see horror, they expect straight up slasher. And then they get a real deep dive into relationships and stuff like that, and they're like, this is not what I signed up for. But you're pushing boundaries, and I just applaud you for that, because it's very easy, especially when you're making like a feature film and it's one of your firsts. I just love that you didn't stick with all the classic horror points and just made it so generic, but actually added something completely new to it and added some depth to the genre.
Thank you. I do have to attribute a lot of that to AJ. You know, he is such a brilliant storyteller, and we like to do things outside of the norm. And I think he was a big part of making it happen successfully as the writer and the director.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely. Definitely. It sounds like it's a very special production and a special movie. And I've loved speaking with you about this today. Now, for the future, are there any projects, anything you can share with us?
Yeah. I actually, my first network television show that I'm in, Welcome to Fletch, is coming out on Fox. March 17th is the premiere date, and I'm in the fourth episode as the naked lady. I am not, you don't see anything, but I'm really excited for that episode. It's comedy, so it's something that I really enjoy. And then AJ and I are developing another thriller horror called Buried Blood. Think two investigative reporters, kind of in the vein of like a True Detective Vice. They go to a small town in North Georgia to investigate the disappearance of a missing little Black boy, and they uncover a demon devil worshiping cult that does blood sacrifice to raise an army of zombies. So it was inspired actually by the January 6th insurrection in the United States. So like, I love the script. I'm really excited to bring it to life.
Damn. I'm going to look forward to that. And actually, for people listening, so that TV show will be premiering in 2 days because it's coming on the 15th of March. So that's super exciting. And keep your eyes peeled for that. I love that expression. It's so gory. Like, keep your eyes peeled.
I know. Ooh.
Now, we obviously want to know, as a woman in film, if you could recommend one film that you do not think is appreciated enough, what would it be?
Stardust. It's not horror, but I'm gonna recommend it. It's fantasy. It's based on Neil Gaiman's book Stardust, and I love it. Like, it's funny. It's got adventure. It's mystical. So I definitely would recommend Stardust to everyone to watch. It's the last movie I got to see with my family before I went to college.
amazing. And is there a woman who's working in the film industry who inspires you that you'd like to give a shout out to?
Yeah, Jamie Premack Sullivan. She is also been one of my mentors, and she she produced Breaking In, and then right now her feature that she sold, Beast, is in pre-production. And she is someone who does not let people put her in a box. She actually started off in the film industry in PR and transitioned into writing and producing. And like, she's the busiest woman in the world, but she always stops to answer my phone calls and like answer questions. And I'm like, I don't know how to handle this, or like, this is happening to me. And she's just so unapologetically strong and genuine and supportive of other women. And I'm like, so impressed by what she's doing. I hope to be as successful as her in the producing world.
Oh, that's so lovely. And for the listeners out there, is there a final message you want to give?
Yeah, don't let other people tell you when you're allowed to create. I think it's easy to get overwhelmed and think you're not good enough. And just if you have a story inside of you and you want to create and do your art, then do it. You can always find a way.
Amazing. And now finally, where can people find you? Is there anything you want to plug and promote?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram at Jilly_Jones, and it's Jilly with a G. I know I spell it a little weird. So I would say just, yeah, follow me on Instagram and I'll share some silly stuff and serious stuff. And lots of pictures of my dog. Sorry, not sorry.
Amazing. Thank you so much for coming on, Jilly, and telling us all about acting and the experience with making this movie. It's been super insightful.
Thank you.
Making It Women in Film is hosted by Malin Evita, produced in collaboration with her and Redeeming Features. Our production supervisor is Ruth Aitken. Research is by Lauren San Miguel. Shania Bethune and Abby Weiss are our production assistants. If you enjoy our show, please remember to subscribe and leave a review. You can also support the show by posting about us on your social media and following us on Instagram at Making It Women in Film. If you have any questions or feedback, DM us or email us at miwif.feedback@gmail.com. For more, visit womeninfilm.co.uk or redeemingfeatures.co.uk. Everything will be linked down in the show notes. Thank you, and we'll see you next Tuesday for another episode of Making It Women in Film.